A friend of mine once told me about her grandparents from Russia who were quite poor. Her grandfather was a rabbi, and together he and his wife fed many people in their home. Her grandmother was used to stretching the food so as to have enough for everyone. Later, when they immigrated here to the United States, the ice box was filled to the brim because she had been so hungry in Russia. The kitchen was the center of the house. Every nook and cranny was filled to the brim, storing extra food in case it might be needed down the road. If you opened the ice box without caution, an egg might fall out and break onto the kitchen floor. Splat. That happened fairly frequently. Her grandmother's response to this incident was always the same. She would look at the broken egg with satisfaction and say, "Aha, today we have sponge cake." So much of what we bring to the Thanksgiving table comes from our understanding of what happens when there is not enough to share. Perhaps a time when there was not enough food or not enough love. A few years ago, I worked at an interfaith summer program where I met an amazing young woman I will call Olivia. She gave me permission to share her story. At age 13, she escaped out a bedroom window to get away from an awful living situation. Her story of hearth and home was that her family no longer knew how to kindle warmth, and she was cold to the bone. No one in her family had ever been in foster care before, but she fought to get herself into the system with the help of a social worker from school who she actually lived with for a little while at first. She was like a refugee landing in America with nothing, hoping for anything better than from whence she had come. Holidays were the absolute worst in Olivia's family. Everyone was on edge until they slipped into cruelty. She would find herself walking the streets after dinner, even as a pretty young kid, for a moment of quiet, watching lit windows with families inside that just looked so jolly. The moon might have been shining above, but she was alone in the dark. Because of her own perseverance, though, I am glad to say that she now has safety and warmth surrounding her. Time has helped, and kind friends have really helped. This year, Olivia joined her school's literary magazine and has written a column for the week of Thanksgiving. And I will let her words speak for themselves. Everyone says Thanksgiving is a time for joy and happy family moments. But some of us don't have happy families. I want to tell you, if you don't have a happy family, you are not alone. I think in most cases, you can do something to make it better for yourself, because there is happiness out there, even if you can't see it yet. But if you feel stuck or sad right now, and you don't have a way forward, I just want to tell you that I believe you and that I know it can be that bad. Before I got into my foster family, she writes, I only felt sad and scared. Someone was always fighting or throwing something or beating someone else. I had to escape to be free. I used to always feel sad, but with a new start and family to live with that cares about me, I am finding happiness that doesn't feel like it will quickly slip away. This year, I made friends with someone whose dad got sent overseas in the military. She always had a happy life before this, but now she feels like I used to feeling scared every day and wondering if violence will take him. She and I started in opposite places, but now we understand each other. Now we both know happiness and sadness. For some of us, sadness is all around, and we have to fight it off to find happiness. I also think happiness is all around and that if you have it, you should share it. The real message of Thanksgiving isn't just to be with family or be happy or be grateful. It's to share what goodness you have, however you find it, because some people really need it more than you think. She closes by saying, one of the best ways to make yourself happy is to make other people happy. One of the best ways to make other people happy is to be happy yourself. Thank you, Olivia. The story of the first Thanksgiving, often portrayed as a cheerful encounter between pilgrims and Native Americans over a bountiful harvest meal, carries, as we know, a deeper, more somber truth. In 1620, after a harsh winter that claimed the lives of half of the Mayflower's original immigrants from England, the Wampanoag tribe taught the pilgrims to plant corn and other vegetables that paired together to harvest more yield, to produce more yield, and to survive in the wilderness. They really needed that knowledge. In November of 1621, the pilgrims organized a harvest feast in Plymouth to celebrate their first successful crop. The Wampanoag people were not invited. Instead, they arrived after hearing gunfire and fearing war. After being told it was a harvest celebration, the Wampanoags brought deer to share. Because the feast was the start of nearly a century of deadly disease and war, and because the oppression of Native heritage people continues to this day, the Wampanoags and many other Native populations don't gather for food and festivities on the third Thursday in November. It is a day of mourning instead. The sanitized version of the first Thanksgiving, often told to children, reminds me of Olivia's experience of looking through the windows at all the jolly families and not having the acknowledgement of any struggle or strife within. There is no way to go back and do history all over again, but we can't skip over the fact that there was cruelty beyond measure for the people who called this land home. Entire tribes were decimated, children were taken from parents and sent to boarding schools, and hundreds of Native languages are now spoken by no one. We can't skip over the awful things. With this acknowledgement of pain lies a powerful lesson, a reminder of the importance of empathy, truth-telling, and working for a more equitable society. The spirit of Thanksgiving, when rooted in the true narrative, becomes a call to change what is not right, address needs, and to share with an ever more generous heart. Recently, I saw two men at a Chaplain's on the Way gathering here in our coat room to swap shoes. The reason was that one pair of shoes had more ankle support, and one of the men had been stumbling. The one with the better shoes wanted to support his friend not to fall, so he took the sneakers with worn down heels and gave the better ones to the friend with a great need. Collective well-being arises only when we share what we have, when we love without judgment, when we make a table wide enough for all, the foster child, the widow, the neighbor whose home is outdoors. As Jan Richardson says, and we will open our hands to the feast without shame. And we will turn toward each other without fear. And we will give up our appetite for despair. And then we will taste and know of delight. May it be so. Amen.